I'm Lori Watanabe, the editor of Mobility Management Magazine, and this is a special edition of the Mobility Management Podcast for National CRT Awareness Week. I'm very happy to welcome my co-host for this episode, McKay Lee, the Associate Director of NCART. Hello, McKay.
Hi, Lori. It was so much fun to be on the hosting side of a podcast this time around, and I was honored to be a part of this, so thank you so much for having me. And thanks again for helping us celebrate and promote CRT Awareness Week.
Totally agree. It was so much fun. For National CRT Awareness Week, which is September 20th through the 24th, McKay and I interviewed three special guests: Brooke McCall, Senior Director, Tech Access Initiative for United Spinal and a consumer of complex rehab technology; Aaron Michael, PT, DPT, ATP, SMS, Manager of Patient Advocacy and Special Programs for Kennedy Krieger Institute in Baltimore; and Mike Osborne, ATP, CRTS, the owner of Alliance Rehab and Medical Equipment. And the reason we talked to Brooke, Aaron, and Mike is that the theme of this podcast is complex rehab technology advocacy, which is ultimately the goal of National CRT Awareness Week, to preserve access to the seating and wheeled mobility that empowers children and adults to be as active and independent and healthy as possible. So, McKay, just as a little background, when you and I talked about the potential lineup for this podcast, you immediately thought of inviting a consumer of CRT, a clinician who specializes in CRT, and then someone from the CRT industry. Why did that lineup really speak to you?
Well, Lori, as we all know, the provision of CRT or the process to provide CRT really takes a village, so to speak. Determining which adaptive and specialized equipment is going to be the best fit for the functional and mobility needs of a specific individual takes a lot. It requires evaluations, medical history, someone's personal experiences, measurements, equipment expertise and training, and a whole lot of communication. So getting it right is a lot harder when that interdisciplinary team that, you know, usually includes, you know, a physician, a physical or occupational therapist, a credentialed CRT supplier, someone who's qualified to supply this equipment, and of course the CRT user themselves, if they're not all involved in adding their input into the process, it's just so much harder to get it right. And I think that we need to stop and recognize the manufacturers in this process too, because none of this would be possible at all if they weren't behind the scenes designing and creating and innovating and producing the quality equipment that's then being configured for individuals with unique medical needs. So advocacy for CRT isn't really all that different than the provision process itself. When we get this whole group of people in the room, or on these days it might be a Zoom call, but you know what I mean, when we get together with a legislator or other decision makers, we want to be able to tell the CRT story from start to finish so that we can really paint that whole picture of how this process happens and how much goes into it, and then why access is so critical before we start presenting our asks or making our requests. But like the provision process itself, that's a heck of a lot harder when we don't have the whole CRT team working together to communicate what's needed in order to protect access. So that's why I thought having the perspectives of, you know, someone's personal experience, some clinical background, and then industry knowledge all together would be perfect for our advocacy podcast for CRT Awareness Week. And I am so thrilled with how that discussion played out.
Yes, absolutely. Me too. So for our interviews, we took turns asking questions and getting feedback from each of our guest speakers. Brooke, Aaron, and Mike came to the podcast with their own perspectives, of course, and they had not talked to each other ahead of time. But I was completely surprised and very impressed by how well their experiences and their ideas sort of meshed with each other. And there was a little bit of overlap, but there were also plenty of unique experiences that they shared. McKay, did you think that Brooke, Aaron, and Mike, did they say anything that surprised you or inspired you? What did you think of the interviews that they gave us?
Oh, Lori, I love what you just said about how each guest was unique in their own experience and what they shared, but that it was really obvious that their opinions and their advice for other advocates overlapped and strengthened what the other guests had already been saying as well. And the reason I love that is because it was completely unintentional, but it was a perfect example of how this whole advocacy thing works. I mean, sure, we could all individually go and we can share valuable information on our own as individuals, but how much stronger and more effective is our message when we're joining forces and teaming up to share that CRT story? And the best part is that, generally speaking, when you get a group of folks like this in a room together or on a call, it happens so naturally. And I think that's exactly what happened when we were chatting through all of our questions. And yeah, I thought it was so cool to see it all come together.
Thanks, McKay. This interview was a lot of fun, and I hope we can collaborate again sooner than later. And now here's our interview with Brooke McCall, Aaron Michael, and Mike Osborne. The way we'll do this today, we'll be asking questions and then getting feedback from each of our guest speakers, and we'll ask them to draw on their personal experiences, of course. McKay and I will be handing the microphone sort of back and forth as we do that. So I'll start us off with our first question, which is, how do you approach CRT advocacy? So as an example, imagine that I'm a congressional staffer and you're explaining to me why I should be aware of CRT, what I should know about it, and why you're advocating for CRT. So I'd like to know, what's kind of your opening pitch? How do you start these conversations? And Brooke, I'll start with you. How do you get started on those conversations?
Well, what I really want to come across initially, and just obviously depending on the circumstance, if I'm in person, my wheelchair, you know, kind of speaks a bit on its own. But of course, a lot of us are doing virtual advocacy here today, so it's good to keep in mind the visual cues. But beyond that, I like to actually verbalize and say, to recognize that my wheelchair is the tool with which I'm experiencing everything beyond my bed. And being a busy person who spends long days in my chair, yes, I'm very excited to get into bed at the end of the day, but I certainly don't want to be stuck there. And it is my wheelchair that really ends up being my kind of my legs, my ambulation. And it is what I use to, you know, explore the world. And with the right technologies, it's able to better facilitate my health, my comfort, and my independence as I'm engaging the world. So I do everything I can using my personal examples and examples of my friends and peers in the community to kind of reframe the narrative of wheelchair users. I don't want people to be thinking of these archaic notions and biases that unfortunately, you know, have been the historical pattern following a medical model that says we are not self-sufficient, and that's completely untrue. What we need to really focus on and share with policymakers is that we have huge potential, and with the right equipment, we're able to be employed, we're able to interact and be very vital members of the community, and to do that kind of in partnership with our therapists and with the ATPs and equipment providers. So yes, I agree. I like being in the room with multi-voices that are, you know, part of my interdisciplinary team, where I can point to the issues that happen both for my therapist and some of the barriers they face. Same thing with the equipment providers. And then on my end, knowing that if these two are having a lot of trouble, then it means I'm not getting the equipment I need. And if the policies aren't there and the insurance coverage isn't there, then I'm stuck. And often for many of us, that means being stuck in bed or facing something like a pressure sore or something that's really taking us out of the game. And I want to make sure that a policymaker knows that shouldn't be anyone's reality.
Well, I love, Brooke, how you even love being with other professionals involved in this, that you see that's really useful to your conversations as well. That's an eye-opener for me. And Aaron, I will turn to you next and ask, What is your pitch when you're explaining who you are, what you do on the team, and also why you're taking the extra step of talking to a Capitol Hill staffer? Why are you investing in advocacy? What is your pitch as you're starting that conversation?
So I got to say, I love that Brooke answered this question first, because I see our consumers really are the opening pitch for us. I invite consumers to join me as often as I can, because having a CRT user in the room tells the story, and whether that's in person in the room or on the call. So it's really the best way to demonstrate how that equipment impacts someone's day-to-day life. But as far as my role and my opening pitch, I think the big thing that I like to convey is, and what got me into advocacy was that there really just wasn't the awareness that there's a difference between a CRT wheelchair and that standard wheelchair. So I kind of like to open with that, especially with staffers that maybe are not familiar with CRT as a term. It's not the chair that you see at the mall or the airport entrance. It is built to be a part of the user's body. So it's unique to that specific person. It cannot be used by anyone else. The fit and the function of that piece of equipment impacts nearly every aspect of their life, work, home, ability to take care of themselves, their overall health. It is literally woven into their daily existence. And that actually is for the better or for the worse. And that's kind of where I come in. So when you have a specialist in this area, and that includes myself and our supplier in on the appointment, we're there to really guide the process, make sure that, you know, I'm there doing the evaluation. I'm making sure that I know the patient, I know their body, and that I can help the supplier as we pick out the piece of equipment. If it's done properly, we can dramatically improve someone's daily life. But I said it's for better or for worse, because if it's done wrong, it can have the exact opposite effect, and it can dramatically impair someone's health and independence. So my pitch is that we really need the specialists involved in the process and the people who are the experts in the equipment when it's CRT to make sure that we are matching that equipment to that person and really making that positive impact on their life.
Well, what I'm hearing from you, Erin, is that there's a lot of precision to this. You know, this isn't just sort of any clinician, any supplier, and the margin for error is not great. So if this isn't done well, then actually the equipment isn't of optimal use, maybe isn't of much use at all. So now, Mike, I'll turn to you. You're the provider. You're the equipment expert typically in this equation. So what is your best opening pitch when you're explaining not only your part in the provision of complex rehab, but also why complex rehab is something you believe in so much?
Well, you know, I hate to repeat some of the things that Erin just said, but I do think she's right. I think it was perfect to start this off with Brooke. I think it's always nice to have a user in the room. And from a provider standpoint, it's a different approach. When I go in, I want them to know who I am and what we do, but I quickly wanted to distinguish between DME, standard wheelchairs, and complex rehab wheelchairs to get their mindset off of the commercials, off of the hospital chairs, and into exactly what Erin described, a chair that's going to be more than just to get around in the home, but to be a quality of life. It's going to be full mobility. And we tried to talk about the assessment process, but where we come into play in being in the home, you know, we're not just in the clinic setting. We actually go to the home. We use that equipment as a trial to see if we're going to get through the doorways. What do we need to get into and out of the house? How are we going to transport the chair, even though funders may not play a part in helping transport? How are we going to transport the chair? It's not just to get in and go from one room to the other in your home. This is a piece of your life to increase that quality. And I think it's important that we talk to legislators in that way. And what I have found most recently is if we do that, they've either had a family member, a friend, or known someone that's used a piece of that equipment. And now we have a common ground that we can kind of talk about and explain why that's so important. We recently had a site visit, and the legislature actually came in and told me about someone in the House using a chair with a seat elevator, which was a perfect segue into our conversation about power mobility and the reason that seat elevation is so important, which we will talk more about as we move through CRT week. I also think it's just a passion. You have to speak from the heart. You can't read a script. And I think when you do that, your reason behind being there and the purpose behind what you're saying comes so much more, so much stronger through to that individual.
Well, that's pretty awesome that someone came up to you, Mike. I love that. What a great opportunity to share. I mean, that's perfect, absolutely perfect. So thank you, Mike. Now, McKay, I'm going to hand the microphone over to you.
Well, thanks, Lori. I am loving this discussion so far, and it's obvious that our three guests are CRT advocacy experts with tons of experience in talking to senators and representatives and the staff members, the policy staffers in their offices. But for a lot of other advocates, for other industry stakeholders or other individuals who are interested or curious about advocacy, whether it's complex rehab technology or maybe some other topic, talking to policymakers or legislators about complex rehab technology or anything else and saying, you know, hey, this is really important for consumers, this is really important, you know, for clinicians, for suppliers, this matters, can feel really intimidating. So I'd love to know more about how each of you get comfortable or became comfortable being an advocate, and maybe what is the biggest difficulty that you ran into. Do you have any advice for individuals who are overcoming that anxiety when they're advocating? This time, Erin, let's start with you.
Sure. The honest answer is I just started. And with time came the comfort in the process. The thing I knew when I got started was that I just couldn't sit back and watch the situation unfold as it was unfolding. I had to take action. I guess part of that is who I am as a person. I don't believe in complaining without taking action on something. If I'm not going to take action on it, then I need to accept it. And I wasn't willing to accept what was happening in this industry because it was impacting the lives of the people that I work with and care very much about each day. Taking action in this case, of course, meant going to the source of the problem. And the source of this problem of limited access, is the legislation. And so that meant becoming an advocate. And so here I landed. I was lucky to come to NCART and to the CTF, the Clinician Task Force, and find some great mentors. And I just kind of followed them along, soaked it all in, took up everything I could, and here I am today. So, and then as far as the biggest difficulty that I run into, I don't know that I could think of one thing specifically. I think something to know, though, is that this is a very slow moving process, and it takes consistency and commitment and repetition and building relationships. So you really need to get to know the offices that you're getting involved with and take the time to make sure that they know you. And, you know, I've worked really hard to so that now when a piece of legislation comes up that impacts our consumers, some of my congressmen and women's offices actually reach out to me and say, hey, Erin, we saw this come across your desk and we just wanted to let you know that we're signing on. And I think that shows they now, when they see that legislation, they think of my consumers, they think of me, they have someone in their mind, and they know the impact that that legislation is going to make. And that's a big part of it, but it takes time. And I think that's the thing. You really have to be able to be patient and kind of hard-headed. You have to understand that you're not going to make leaps and bounds every day, but it's going to be a gradual process and it's going to grow over time. And then I think advice for overcoming anxiety, what I like to tell people is to think of advocacy as education. I think in this industry, we take for granted just how well we understand people with disabilities and the equipment they use and need each day. The general population, including our legislators, do not have that level of experience with people with disabilities and their equipment. They need us to share our knowledge with them, to help them gain more insight. As the experts, we get the opportunity to share our knowledge base. And I think one of my favorite things that one of our well-known colleagues that Jerry says is that they all get up in the morning and tie both of their shoes. They put each leg in a pair of pants, just like we do. The people that we are talking to are just like us, and they don't have the expertise in this area. We do. And so we're coming to them with our knowledge, and we're taking the opportunity to teach them. And I think when you think about advocacy in that way, in that idea that advocacy is education, takes away some of that stress and can really make it seem more of a give and take process.
Thanks, Erin. That's so much good information there. And absolutely, to your point, advocacy, we've said for a long time, is not a sprint. It is absolutely a marathon, and it does take time to build that understanding and to share and educate these policymakers and these legislators about complex rehab technology as a whole. And sometimes that can take years to see results from. And so being hard-headed, being stubborn, which thankfully I think a lot of us would admit that we are anyway, you know, it plays to our advantage because we are driven by that passion. And we are driven by that desire to see change and to take action. And that's so much of what CRT Awareness Week is all about. So I'm so glad that you mentioned all of those things. Mike, how did you get comfortable with being an advocate?
I don't want to follow Erin. That was a great answer. she covered so many wonderful things. I love the fact that you mentioned advocacy is like education, because I think it took me a long time to understand that. And I still get nervous. I'm not going to sit here and act like I don't. I think anytime you're talking to a U.S. senator, a U.S. representative, there's a little bit of intimidation. But I think something Erin mentioned there is it shouldn't be. They want to be there. They want to hear what we have to say, but they aren't as familiar with what we do and what we see daily as we are. So it's about educating and teaching and bringing them along the way. For me, that was my biggest difficulty, getting over the nerves of sitting across the table from someone like that. I think being prepared, anytime somebody wants to come in and talk to us, the more prepared they are, the more we listen. And I think it's the same case there. I always try to go in and look and see what committees are my legislators on? What are they working on? Where are their interests? What are they really about right now? And if one of those interests is what we're talking about, it makes the conversation so much easier. I don't want to dive too deep into it, but I know this week telehealth is going to be a topic. So I want to know who's already signed on to that in the past, who's interested, who's talked about it. I want to prepare myself so that I can speak intelligently with them, knowing that they are already leaning that direction to talk about how important that is for our clients, our end users. I think they want to know what we do. They are representing us. So I also think we overlook the relationships with the healthcare individuals in their office in D.C., but specifically in the home office and back in the state. I think building that relationship is something that I've worked on, and it's been really good for us. I love the fact, Erin, you said they call you and say, hey, this came across my desk, and I thought of you and what you do, and we're going to sign on, because I think that's the goal, is to leave something in their mind when we walk away that they know they can call and ask questions. That this means enough to us that they can count on us to answer those questions for them and to move them in a direction to maybe help us with a bill or policy. So I hate to say, Erin, you give a wonderful answer. I don't know what I can add to that, but that's how I got more comfortable, is just spending more time doing it, trying to build relationships throughout the year, not just once a year in Washington, D.C.
I think you just did a great job. So you added quite a bit to what I said. So it was wonderful.
Yeah, I'll agree, Mike. That was really excellent advice. And as you said, practice makes perfect, or as my son would remind me, practice makes progress. And you actually set me up perfectly for my next question, which is for Brooke this time around. Brooke, do you have a routine that you go through? Mike mentioned a few things that he always does, you know, prior to meeting with a legislator or with a policymaker, but do you have a routine that you go through as you prepare to speak to your legislators? And what's your advice for people who wonder if they can do this too, if they can be like the three of you and be brave enough to take advocacy on?
I do, definitely. And first and foremost, I think what I'd want to say to anybody who's just starting out and is just wondering, you know, is my voice relevant in this space? Well, 1,500%, your voice is so relevant, and just your experiences and your storytelling and your narrative is huge. So even, you know, if you're a newbie to this legislative discussion, know that our voices are so important. I have been in a room with clinicians and professionals in this space, and guess what? The policymaker generally zeroes in on me and says, I want to hear what you have to say. And I had that happen to me really early on in a very big group where I think it was my first time advocating at all, just in my state house, and somebody zeroed in, and I didn't feel like the person with the most expertise. But that said, I'm who they wanted to listen to, and that really built up my confidence to say, wait a second, oh, I'm understanding this process. People I'm hearing that say, you know, come on in, you know, they want to talk to us, they mean it. And so, you know, at this point, I do like to prep, like Mike says. I like to do a deep dive, or at least a quick deep dive when I'm able, into the legislator's background, get an idea of what they prioritize and where they've stood on CRT in the past. Generally, that really helps me to frame my conversation. I'm always really honored, and I'm always trying to encourage other wheelchair users to understand the privilege that we have when we're able to speak for our fellow peers and chairs in these positions. So I really like to amplify relevant stories, both about myself, but often it's going to be about my peers that I think are going to resonate, you know, best with the policymaker I'm speaking to at the time. And so for some of them, that may mean really framing the conversation around the importance of CRT for veterans, or maybe for others, it's the elderly, and others, it's really just about humanizing my own experience in a way that helps them recognize that my story could easily be their own, or their wives, or their daughters, a sister, a friend, or whomever, and that what I'm sharing is hugely important to my life and may become very relevant to them and their other constituents. And we're trying to set them up to win. Right now, we're struggling. Things aren't perfect. Changes need to be made. But that I and the other folks advocating in this space are here to help. But I like to find touch points here in Oregon. I communicate a lot with Senator Wyden's office, and we both went to UC Santa Barbara. So I go back to that and say, wait a second, you know, prior to my injury, I was going to the same university that you had previously attended. And just finding that simple commonality can really spark a relationship. And now I have, you know, these meaningful relationships with some of my representatives. And like Aaron mentioned, I mean, there's nothing better than having one of those offices call you and say, hey, we've signed on, or, you know, I'm thinking of you, and knowing that, you know, your story and what you have shared with them is really impactful for the decisions that maybe they wouldn't know what to do with on their own without our guidance.
I think that's really well put, Brooke. All three of you now have talked about building those relationships and finding commonalities between yourselves and the legislators or the policymakers that you're speaking with. And I think that really is part of the process. It really is relationship building. And it, as we said before, learning to understand each other and to see things from the other person's perspective. So if folks are wondering how they can learn about their legislators, we talked a little bit about trying to find out, you know, what policies or what pieces of legislation a legislator might be interested in before you meet with them, or what their history might be on matters that relate to complex rehab technology. Most often, a legislator's website will have a lot of information about their particular policies or their platform or what they are hoping to accomplish during their term in office. But NCART and NARTS and the Clinician Task Force are also good resources for folks if anyone's ever wondering, you know, which legislators have been supportive in the past, which ones have had questions, which offices we've built good relationships with. So if folks are wondering how they can even get started in that as they prepare for meetings, there are lots of great resources available. And I know that not only those of us who are on this particular podcast today, but so many others in the industry would be more than happy to help show others how to get involved in that. So I do have a follow-up question to that one, and Mike, get yourself ready because it's your turn to go first. If you had to narrow down all of your years of advocacy experience down to maybe one tip, one thing that makes a difference or something you found that is particularly impactful to the offices and the individuals that you're speaking with, what would that be? I mean, we've talked about being prepared ahead of time. We've talked about sharing stories. You've talked about sharing information from the supplier point of view and some statistics about that. So what is it? What have you found that works well for you?
Obviously, I mentioned preparation. So I think that's very important for me because that puts me at ease. But at the end of the day, the impact in that office at the time you're speaking to that individual, to me, it's got to be sharing a story of someone that you've either impacted their life or you've seen their life impacted by complex rehab technology. Because there has to be something that rings through their mind when we walk away. And typically, that's not going to be me talking or something about my business or what I do. It's going to be the impact on an individual's life. So try to have a story to share, obviously one with a lot of joy to it or a happy ending. But to me, the story can't just be the story. It has to be a story about changing the quality of life. My first 2 years to do this, I was not good at that, but I was lucky enough to be with people that were. And that's where I saw it done. And I heard Aaron mention a name, Jerry, and I think I know who you're talking about, but he's one of those people that I kind of mentored with and watched him and listened to him. So I think it has to be sharing a story. It has to be making this a real life experience, not just a bunch of words from Mike, but an impact in someone's life. And if we can get that across, then the conversation goes deeper the next time we see them. And that's when they start to call us and say, hey, I saw this was happening. How do you feel about it? And how is this going to impact those people that you work with? And to me, that's the number one thing I would say do, is walk out of that room, leaving something behind for them to grasp onto.
Thanks, Mike. And Brooke, I know that you've touched on this a little bit in some of your other responses, but do you have anything that you would add to what Mike just shared?
Sure, yeah. When I can, I just like to point out specific parts of my chair and the unique values, something like my custom cushion, I have molded backrest, I have specific armrests, and kind of explain better about the part they play in my life. You know, obviously, my own comfort and health. You know, I can always share examples from my life where I've been lucky and haven't had, you know, pressure issues because I've been lucky enough to have access and had to fight for many of these specific pieces of my chair, so I can actually literally show them if I'm in person, point them out, see this is different than what, you know, your standard issue backrest would look like. And then I, you know, can go a little further into that and saying I'm a high quadriplegic, you know, I wouldn't be as well supported. You know, if that was my standard issue back, I would likely be leaning. This is why that's so huge. And then I really also often speak about my friends and community members that couldn't make it maybe there that day. If I'm in DC on the Hill, I can say, you know, many of the people back home aren't able to travel here. They don't have the proper chairs. They're so worried about any kind of damage or a need for repair, and really kind of speak to the person who's not in the room or maybe even stuck in bed because of the lack of access to the CRT they need. So I know that that always definitely resonates well, and it's very true. I mean, it's such a huge problem for our community, and it's important for them to think of the people who they're not seeing in their offices because, I mean, for some of them, it just literally because they can't make it there, they don't have the right chair.
Yeah, and Brooke, I know I've had the privilege of being in meetings where, just like you've said, you've got an individual who's utilizing CRT and they're able to make it to that meeting, and the person you're meeting with, their ability to see the equipment right there in front of them in the room with them really does make such a huge difference because they connect the dots between, as Aaron was saying earlier, the massive differences between just standard durable medical equipment and complex rehab technology, because it can be very difficult to catch it just by reading a piece of paper. But when you see somebody being truly affected by that and the impact that it has and how each distinct measurement is unique to an individual, that's when, you know, that education starts to take place where they begin to learn. And it's more than just a policy. It's more than just changing a piece of legislation or, you know, these individuals are asked for so many things. You know, basically their jobs are to sit in their offices and to be asked for things over and over and over. And we've been, when we go to Capitol Hill, I know that we've seen, you know, you sit down with somebody in their office and you can tell they've just had meetings all day long. And it's difficult to continue to retain information that's being presented to you. But having a personal experience, having somebody in that room that can show the specifics, and like you said, Brooke, really make an impact by sharing a story or by explaining how their peers or their friends are affected by things like this, then that's when you kind of see that light bulb sort of flicker on. So Aaron, one last question for you. What advice can you offer people who maybe want to advocate for CRT? Maybe they've listened to this conversation and they're thinking, okay, maybe this is something that I should look into. Maybe this is something I want to try. Is there any piece of advice that you would leave with them today?
Sure, McKay. So just listening to the three of you, McKay, Mike, Brooke, you've all given great advice. And so I just have a simple piece of advice. If you're feeling compelled to get involved, just do it. Don't overthink it, like I'm guilty of all the time, and just start it. If you aren't sure about starting on the Hill, if that the federal level seems more intimidating, you can always start small. You can advocate for change at your place of employment, in your local neighborhood, with insurance companies, or even the state level. Advocacy doesn't have to be big and on Capitol Hill. It can be where you're comfortable. And if you are a clinician, shameless plug, join us on the Clinician Task Force. We have a great group of mentors for you. If you're a supplier, follow along with NCART, NARTS. As a consumer, there are consumer groups like United Spinal that you can join. So these groups are available for you to learn where and how to help from your peers, from people who are like you. And so what better place to learn than from folks like us?
I think that's perfect, Aaron, and I will echo that because I have, you know, like everyone else on this podcast today, have had the privilege and the honor of learning from other individuals who have been advocating for decades. And, you know, we've all had the benefit of learning from them and learning from one another. So with that, Lori, I'm going to turn the microphone right back over to you.
Thank you so much, McKay, and thank you, Brooke, Aaron, and Mike, for sharing your stories. I was taking all kinds of notes while the three of you were talking, and you've already made, I think, CRT advocacy sound a lot less mysterious and intimidating than it was just at the start of this podcast. So I think it is awesome that when CRT policies do cross desks of legislators and staffers, that because of the work you're doing, these policymakers don't see just vague constituents. They actually think of Brooke and Aaron and Mike and McKay. So thank you so much for your time, and I hope that you have some great conversations during CRT Awareness Week.
Lori, thank you so much for having us on. I've been nervous all day, I'm not going to lie, but I really enjoyed it. And I just hope that everyone that gets out to advocate during CRT Week enjoys it and has a lot of fun doing it, because I think this is something that if you try it, it kind of gets into your blood and you don't want to stop.
And McKay, do you have any final thoughts on CRT Awareness Week?
Hey, well, I feel like Mike right now. It's really difficult to try and add anything to what our guests, which feels weird to say, Lori, because this is technically your podcast, but our guests, since you've been so kind to let me co-host with you today. It's very difficult. It's hard to add anything to what's already been shared, because it's been such good conversation that's come from years of dedicated experience from each one of these individuals. But going back to Aaron's advice when it comes to advocating, and anyone who might be thinking about advocacy or checking out CRT Awareness Week, which this year runs, you know, September 20th through the 24th, if you're feeling compelled, if you're curious even, or if you just want to learn more, take some small actions. You know, follow through with that and look into it. It can be, as Aaron said, it doesn't have to be, you know, this big sweeping advocacy movement. You don't have to jump in right at meeting with your members of Congress. Although, you know, the way that we've set up the virtual fly-in this year, we do always try to take into account that, you know, some folks might be joining us for their first time. So we never ask anyone to go into these meetings alone. We always pair you up with other advocates from your state, and we make sure that people are prepared with talking points and with resources and with documents that they can leave behind for the offices. And we even make sure that the offices are provided with all of our asks and all of our position papers before our advocates sit down for those meetings, before they attend those meetings. So even the offices are a little bit prepared before all of those meetings are taking place. But when it comes to CRT Awareness Week, you know, there's a lot of ways that people can get involved, whether it's, you know, posting something on social media, like sharing their story or sharing a friend's story or a family member's story. Or, you know, I know the Clinician Task Force plans to share maybe some testimonials or some other great things. I know that, you know, suppliers all across the country are getting involved and sharing details about what they do. And some providers are just taking the time to thank the individuals that they work with and to thank the clinicians that they work with. So advocacy can start small. It doesn't have to be this huge leap right from the get-go. You can ease your way into it. And NCART and NARTS and the Clinician Task Force and Lori, even you and other organizations, United Spinal, we're all here as a resource and as, you know, individuals who are passionate about this and want to see other people get involved. So we're always here to answer questions or to help brainstorm or even just to talk through the process with anyone who's curious about advocacy. So I do hope that everyone will take a peek and they'll look into what CRT Awareness Week is all about, which, as anyone might guess, it has to do with spending an entire week sharing information about complex rehab technology and increasing awareness and starting that education and providing details for folks who may not know as much about it, because the more you share what we do, what the equipment is, and why access to it is so extremely important for the individuals who utilize it, you know, that passion spreads, that desire to advocate and that desire to enact change grows. And that's what we're hoping for with CRT Awareness Week, is that we'll be able to create new advocates and see, you know, more advocates in the future. Lori, that's what we're hoping to do, so that we can protect access to complex rehab technology. So there is information available on our website. It's www.ncart.us, or folks can shoot me an email if they want to. My email address is mlee@ncart.us, and I am always happy to help.
Thanks so much, McKay. What great advice, and it really has me excited for the week. Our thanks to Brooke McCall, Aaron Michael, and Mike Osborne for sharing the microphone with us today. And thanks also to McKay Lee of NCART for partnering with us on this very special podcast. Mobility Management podcasts are available for listening and downloading on iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. And the best way to make sure you don't miss any episodes is to subscribe. You can also go onto our website, mobilitymgmt.com, to listen there. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back with another episode soon.